I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello and welcome to the Red Box Politics podcast from The Times. I'm Matt Chorley. This is the second part of our special in the run-up to Pride in London, in which I sat down for a chat with Justin Greening, the Education Secretary and Minister for Equalities, about coming out, her view of the DUP, and why her personal slogan is keep on trucking. Don't forget, you can sign up to our morning email briefing at thetimes.co.uk/redbox and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and on your Android device. So Justin Greening, Education Secretary, Minister for Equalities. This time a year ago, British politics was in turmoil, as it seems to be constantly these days. In the middle of it all, you tweeted, "I campaign for strong green, but sometimes you're better off out," which I have to say was a particularly ingenious way, I thought, of combining the national news with your personal news, and you going public with your relationship with Tess. What was the reaction to that, and how does it feel now looking back over the last 12 months?
It was a massive reaction at the time, much more, I think, than I ever expected. And I had thought about what was the right way to be clear about my own relationship. And I wanted to do it in a really positive way. And I guess I wanted to do it in my way as well, which was to do a modern tweet, slightly irreverent about myself, and to land it in the middle of a weekend that for the whole LGBT community, yes, is still about campaigning for steps forward, but it's also a celebration.
Yeah.
And so that's when I thought would be good to do it. And I just remember just getting the tweet, you know, you push this little bit of your iPhone screen and wait to see what happens. And what happened was something that was incredible, which was, it was just retweeted and the messages started coming back from the word go, and all positive.
Yeah.
And I think it was quite humbling actually to get so much feedback on it. And I had lots of parents get in touch with me just saying that they had children who were gay and that this had really helped them feel like it was fine.
Yeah.
And so what, actually? They were going to be able to get on with their life. And I think when I'd looked at it myself, I realised that there's not going to be a big moment when you know, all the challenges that have been faced by LGBT people over the years suddenly get fixed. It's a series of steps.
Yeah.
And I decided and realised that I could be one of those little steps that helped move things forward. And even now, I was at the Stonewall hustings, actually, during the election campaign, just nipped into the ladies afterwards. And there was a girl in there who said to me, you know, that tweet was amazing, and actually gave me the confidence to talk to my parents about my sexuality. And I think it still brings home to you that I think for all of us, the fact that there's awareness now and people feel able to discuss sexuality and these issues, actually it's part of how we keep moving LGBT rights on and changing attitudes. And I think attitudes are moving in the right direction. But actually, you know, I did want to play a role in helping make that happen, and so for me it was a massively positive step to take.
What, one of the things in the first episode of this podcast special that we discussed a lot was whether or not it is sort of still a big deal being a gay politician, because the parliament that's just been elected is the most out Britain's ever had and the most diverse in the world. And yet it's sort of, I mean, partly because there was quite a lot of other news about it at the time, but it wasn't particularly remarked upon at the time. It's sort of just an accepted thing. Do you think we are now at the point where both, well, both you and when David Mundell came out, it's sort of greeted with a sort of very happy shrug of, that's good news, you know, it's good that you've chosen to do that, but it's not the sort of storm that actually not that long ago used to be quite, you know, quite controversial.
I think attitudes, it does feel like attitudes are changing quite quickly now. I mean, even if you look, say, 5 years ago, I feel like there's much more normalisation of talking about LGBT issues than there's ever been. And when you look at the latest attitude survey, and it said 63% said that this was absolutely fine, they had no problem with this, you have a sense of the fact that we should never take our foot off the pedal, because clearly there is still discrimination that goes on, and it's significant, and it's one of the reasons why we do so much work in schools. But actually, the good news is that things are moving forward quite swiftly now, but we need to keep our foot on the pedal, because I think as much progress as we've made, you know, there will be still people who want to try and turn the clock back, and I don't think they should be allowed to do that. And I should say, I do think it's great that we've got so many LGBT MPs. I think it's fantastic. I think you're right that actually it tells you everything about how far things have come, that it's not particularly a big deal, but there's still a lot of work to be done, and we haven't got any transgender MPs, although we had some candidates, and I think traditionally we seem to have most of a debate about more women in Parliament, which I also passionately believe in and want to see happen. But I think what all of this shows is that diversity in Parliament's a good thing.
Yeah.
It will mean you get better decisions that work for more people in our country, and we should be pushing on all of those different areas as much as we can.
I need to ask you about the outcome of the general election, which obviously led to the Conservatives doing a deal with the DUP, which includes MPs who say they were pulsed by gay and lesbianism. That was Ian Paisley Jr. Another MP said the Garden of Eden was Adam and Eve and not Adam and Steve. How do you feel being in a government which is relying on that party?
I think we've put together a deal with them which is actually far less formal in a sense than the full coalition that we had with the Lib Dems, where again there were areas that we didn't see eye to eye at all on. I think what's interesting to me is the fact that the DUP have their views, but you know what? In this parliament, they're absolutely in the minority. And as we just talked about, you know, we've had never had more LGBT MPs. And I think that the other big change that's happened for the better is that our parliament, you know, there's a cross-party consensus on moving forward on LGBT rights. We don't need the DUP to particularly support that, although I hope at some point, you know, again, we'll see their attitudes, you know, some of the attitudes you just talked about steadily change, as I want to see with lots of people who don't buy into LGBT rights in the UK change. But for the meantime, you know what? We can push on with all of the agenda we've got, and we didn't need the DUP votes for that in the past, and we won't need them in the future. And I think, for example, you just look at the really groundbreaking step forward on relationship and sex education being made compulsory in all secondary schools, and relationships education being compulsory in primary schools. And that's something that's been stuck for years. And coming into this role, I just felt it was something we needed to unblock. But we did that on a cross-party basis. And actually, it's quite important, I think, for these sorts of issues in particular, that we do bring the whole of Parliament with us. But yeah, there'll always be some MPs, for whatever reason, who don't buy into it, but they're not going to hold us back.
Do you worry that the association with the DUP will sort of re-toxify the Tory party, which for a long time had a terrible reputation on LGBT issues?
I think I think clearly it was something that was a concern, and for people like me who spoke to both the Prime Minister and also, of course, Gavin Williamson, who was the Chief Whip, really trying to sew together what the art of the possible was. I think we were very clear from the word go, both within our party and I think with the DUP, that there'd be no backsliding on LGBT rights. I'm really proud, actually, that it's been my party that's got two cabinet ministers who are LGBT. I think our Tory LGBT group's done a fantastic job, not just in our own party, but also being part of the broader campaign that groups are leading, like Stonewall.
Yeah.
So I think we played a really positive role. It was a Conservative-led government in 2013 that brought forward the same-sex marriage bill, and indeed that was out of the Home Office that Theresa May, the current Prime Minister, was leading at the time. So I think we can be really proud of our record in government. I also think we need to continue making sure that we play our role as politicians and as a parliament in changing attitudes and continuing to push forward on LGBT rights.
Ruth Davidson talked about how she'd got assurances from the Prime Minister about what this would mean. It sounds like you saw the same assurances.
Indeed, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I felt it was absolutely critical.
Yeah.
You know, we can't have made the amount of progress we have and then see that suddenly taken back in any way. And in fact, I think if anything, this deal has underlined the determination of my own party, but also across government, that whatever the politics of our government situation, you know, a parliament in a way, you know, we're a minority government, but Labour would have equally had their own challenges trying to sew together some kind of government that could work. Actually, in spite of all of that, there is some consensus now, and that is that we're going to keep pushing forward on LGBT issues. And for me, I think Parliament has to be part of that leadership that moves things forward for our country.
Lots of people assume that Theresa May won't lead the Conservatives into the next election. When do you think the time will come when we'll see a gay Prime Minister?
Well, it's interesting to me because I know Leo Varadkar in Ireland, because we were both transport ministers at the same time.
Okay.
And so I became friends with him as part of going to those EU council meetings. So I think it's hugely positive that he's now in that role in Ireland. I think it's fantastic that we've got people like Ruth Davidson leading the Scottish party. I hope there will be a time when a gay person is leading, you know, not just the Conservative Party, but you know, the Labour Party. I think, as I said, I think diversity is really important. And I think if we want to have a parliament that's full of the broad spectrum of people living in our country, and is a parliament that when people switch on their TV and see these people who are meant to be representing them, they need to look a bit like them as well, and look a lot like them, ideally. But that goes for all the way through, not just backbenchers. People want to see that in their governments, in their shadow front benches, and in their leadership. So I hope it does happen.
Would that person ever be you?
Well, I never came into politics for a career, I can tell you that. I had a fantastic career in business. I love my role as a local community MP. As I've said, I think I've got the best job that I'll ever have in my life. I'm a state school kid, and I now get to improve our state schools for all the children who are there now. I get to do this brilliant role as Minister for Women and Equality, something that I did loads of, actually, in international development when I was there. So, no, my motto is keep on trucking.
You've got a campaign slogan, you've got a backstory. You're ready to go.
Coming into politics was about, well, it's lots of things, but some of them were, I think the first thing was giving my community a voice. I think the second thing was working on the issues that really drove me. They are things like equality, they are things like social mobility. And I think one of the things I've always found hard to accept as a person is when I've seen unfairness. And I want people to have an equal shot. And so whatever I am doing in politics, those will always be the things that make me get up in the morning. But the reason I love this job is I get to focus both on equalities, and in particular gender equality, of course, as Minister of Women and Equalities, but also equality of opportunity, because it's education and that's how you deliver equality of opportunity.
That sounds like an excellent leadership pitch to me. let's just move on and just to talk about some of the other issues which are sort of in your intro on this. One of the concerns that has been raised is an increase in hate crime and homophobic hate crime, which some people have linked to sort of the broader political environment, Brexit, Donald Trump, the rise of populism, the idea that people now feel, some people might feel they can say and do things that in the past...
They've as it were, taken back control to say whatever they like
now. Do you think that's a real concern?
I think there are a number of different things going on. I think it is really concerning that we continue to see hate crime in our country. And as you say, that it picked up, and it's not just been against LGBT people, it's been against people in the Muslim community as well. So I do think that's a real concern. I think for LGBT in particular, I think there are lots of things changing that are giving us a clearer picture of what's going on. I think the fact that there is much greater awareness and people feel more comfortable about talking about their sexuality, I think it also means they feel much more comfortable about going to the police to say, this has happened, and it's because of my sexuality, and it's not acceptable, and I want you to record that as a crime and then investigate it. We up the sentences, actually, that you can now receive for transgender hate crime, which is absolutely the right thing to do. And I think part of the long-term solution to this is about, in my area of schools, working in schools to make sure that attitudes our attitudes of equality and tolerance and inclusiveness, and I go back to the fact that we brought through the laws to make relationship and sex education compulsory in secondary and relationships education in primary compulsory. Those are really important steps in making sure that a new generation of young people growing up actually don't feel like this is something that they should be hateful about, being LGBT in the first place. But I do think it is good news that I think people in the LGBT community have never felt more able to hopefully come forward and report it when it does happen to them.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no,
I don't, how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
What do you think is behind it, and this idea that it's sort of Brexit and people feeling like political correctness, you know, political correctness has ended now, you know, all that, like you said, taking back control. What's the cause of that?
I don't know. I think it might be just that in some of those almost final pockets of communities who have an issue with LGBT people, in a way, that maybe they see that they're steadily losing this fight on attitudes, and I'm really pleased about that. It's been a fight I've been part of, and you know, I aim to continue being part of. And I think in the end, I fundamentally, I'm a positive person, so we will absolutely bear down on hate crime. We've got a strong legal framework in our country now, we're going to work hard on making sure that we change attitudes of young people, and none of us should tolerate what's going on. And I think that over time we'll continue to just keep on winning this battle. But the hate crime stats show that it's a battle that does need to keep being fought.
You've talked a lot about schools because obviously your other job in the education sector is focusing on schools. One of the concerns that has been raised is that children who are being bullied through your suffering homophobic abuse are perhaps less likely to speak to their parents, speak to their teachers about it, because that would involve for them coming out. And so they end up sort of suffering in silence, which I suppose is quite difficult. It's a, if not understandable, you can see the problem, but it's quite a difficult one to crack that.
And there's no, as it were, silver bullet on this. I think it involves, as I said, making sure that there's not just relationships and sex education in secondary relationships, primary, but also making sure that teaching's high quality.
Yeah.
And there's a broader point on the teaching of values and in tolerance and inclusiveness. I'm really proud of our country. So for all of the challenges that we're talking about, actually, when I spent my last role in international development, I visited some countries where being gay is still a crime. And even if it wasn't, actually, attitudes were very different to what we've got here in the UK. So I think we should reflect that we're in a much, much better place. And actually, what's interesting is you see attitudes changing, but also some evidence that the level of bullying in schools is reducing. But I still feel that this is an area that we need to do much, much more on. That's why we're putting investment into it and working actually with charities that are doing a fantastic job in schools. But we need to, because actually the rise of social media means for children who are getting bullied, it's harder for them to escape being bullied than ever before. So when it does happen, it is often a bigger, more intractable problem for them. And we know that for those kids who do get bullied, those experiences stay with them for often the rest of their lives. It has a huge impact on their mental health. It has a huge impact on their ability to just get on at school and study and learn and make the most of the education they're getting. And that's why it's so important that we keep our foot on the pedal on all of this.
And presumably one of the ways that you can do that and make sure that teachers are doing the job properly is to make sure they're properly resourced and paid. I do need to ask you, where are you with your negotiations of getting more money out of the Chancellor?
And that's a really important question. For me, as an education secretary, I'm of course always going to be making the case for strong resourcing in our schools. We did in the election set out very clearly that there will be more money going into schools, which is good news. And in terms of the other thing that I think was particularly raised, which was around the fact that what we want to do is make sure that funding that's going into schools is more fairly spread, because we still have a system where if you're a child, say, in Blackburn or Bolton, you'll get a very different amount invested in you than, say, if you're right here in London. Making sure that no schools lose out when we bring forward those changes is really important, I think, for being able to unlock taking a step forward, which is probably long overdue in the school system. All of our schools have the same accountability framework. We expect the same high standards in them. Standards are getting better. We saw the Key Stage 2 results for kids at the end of primary really coming on, and there was a significant improvement in them this year when you saw the initial results come out yesterday. But yeah, funding does matter, and of course it's important that we make sure it's fair as well.
And does that mean lifting the pay cap on teachers as well?
Well, I will make sure that when we get the results of the teacher pay review board that it has been underway, that I really carefully look at the recommendations they're making. I think it's a system that does work effectively in the sense that it looks at these competing questions around the need for us to make sure we're a government that's helping us as a country live within our means, and public sector pay restraint has been part of that. It's also worth pointing out that bringing it forwards also enabled us to make sure that the numbers of people in our public sectors has been able to be higher than it otherwise would if we'd had more pay going to fewer people. But they're also able to look in the round about what it means for recruitment and retention, and I think that's a strong process. So I'll look very carefully at what the pay review board in my area comes out with and absolutely will. I'll make an announcement on that when we're in a position to do so.
So just the final question, what do you see as the main challenges now in your equalities brief and in this, you know, Pride Week when people are going to be joining parades in London and around the world this weekend? Where are the sort of priorities now? I mean, apart from presumably securing same-sex marriage in Northern Ireland.
I think that continuing to look at how we can strengthen the legal framework is important. We've got one of the best in the world, but you know what? We can still look at things like the Gender Recognition Act and ask ourselves how that can continue to be updated and work today. I think we need to change attitudes still, and that means not just me being a voice for LGBT rights, but actually practically working with fantastic groups and charities on the ground who are working in schools. It means helping schools and teachers to be able to do a better job, and part of why we made the changes on relationships and sex education was because teachers are saying to me that they felt they needed better tools. Yeah. and they were concerned about the guidance being last set back in 2000, which is a long time ago. I mean, everything's changed since then. So I think there are some practical issues on action. There are some advocacy issues on changing attitudes. I think if we can push on both those areas, then we'll continue to see some big strides forward on LGBT rights and attitudes over the coming years.
And when do you think we'll see same-sex marriages in Northern Ireland?
Well, we had some steps forward in relation to women from Northern Ireland being able to get abortions in England, which I think was really important. And I hope that this debate about LGBT rights across the UK will continue to make progress, including in places like Northern Ireland. And I'll certainly be a voice for progress over the coming months and years, I can assure you of that, whichever role I'm in.
Justine Greening, thank you very much.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you for downloading. To discover more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.